I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
What's the easiest way to find out what channel the game's on? Sports on What? Subscribe to the Sports on What app and quickly find the channel for every provider, satellite, cable, or streaming. Sports on What knows the channel the game is on, and you can too. Download today.
SW. We return to the men's room with Miles and Thrill. Right.
Brand new Linkin Park on Rock.
And somebody here says this Linkin Park song sounds better the second time. Thank you. Yeah. Are you playing it every day now? Count on that.
Yes, yes. That is a fact.
You can guarantee it.
Coming up, you can guarantee we'll drink and toast the weekend with a shot of the day. That's Bad Choice Friday.
You know it's Bad Choice Friday.
It's Bad Choice Friday.
You know it's Bad Choice Friday.
Hey, man, this is your fault.
Yeah. And today we celebrate the kickoff of NFL football on a Bad Choice Friday. The theme being sports. We take one from Huey Lewis in the news.
They say the hotter rock and roll is the
from the album Sports, Huey Lewis in the news, and the heart of rock and roll. Take it on the Viagra boy. Viagra boys and sports, taking on Huey Lewis in the news. Vote now if you follow us on Twitter at Men's Room Live. Do the Viagra boys have a chance, Mike?
They did when you ranted about them in that first segment, but they don't.
No.
Sorry, you can't beat Huey Lewis.
And you know what's odd about this? If I had to guess which one of these artists is actually taking Viagra, it's Huey Lewis.
Hey. You know, Ryan Castle said it, I believe, when we were talking about that. He's like an unapologetic Huey Lewis fan or something like
sure.
that. Is there an apologetic Huey Lewis
Mike,
fan?
Mike, have you listened to Sports Top to Bottom?
Oh, it's a great album.
It is fantastic.
I got it on vinyl. It was one of the first vinyls I bought. It's a wonderful album.
That is, I mean, every single song on that thing is a great tune.
Great.
All right.
Damn right.
Our question, what did you get to do or experience as a kid that most people do not? 206-803-ROCK.
Hello, Angie. Welcome to the men's room.
Hello.
Hola.
So when I was 16, maybe 17, me and a group of my friends got to volunteer as camp counselors, and we all got to spend the night at the Pacific Science Center.
Doing what?
Of course. Well, and of course, us being 16, 17, we had to, of course, pack our own sleeping bags and clothes to go there, and we snuck in our own alcohol.
Of course.
All right.
Being responsible camp counselors of maybe 6-7-year-olds, and then at night, we went off and did our own thing all over the...
Did you guys sleep in that auditorium where they do the laser light shows, like where that... Where you can kind of, you know, they do the astronomy stuff and then the...
That would have been cool, but it wouldn't have been on anyway because they have to have somebody run it. So, but no, they had us sleep downstairs where all the windows are facing the street. So we got the people watch all night long. And we had access to all the staffing hallways and everything all day long because we had to escort kids around. But that was a pretty cool experience.
Yeah.
Wander around the whole place at night with all the lights off.
What were some of the things you discovered there that most people would not know was there?
There's actually nothing exciting there.
That's a hell of a sales pitch.
I know, right? It's just everything you see, you actually see, and all the corridors are just so that they can just get behind the, you know, the...
Oh, right, right. Get behind
them. And just stuff things out, pull things in and out, and that's it. There's really nothing.
I've been there a couple times. Had a good time, took the kids there. Did the Alice in Chains laser light show. I think I was laying on the floor watching that thing. I gotta get down to the aquarium, man. They got a brand new thing down in
The new aquarium. Look, man, the old Seattle aquarium, man, it looked like a warehouse where you keep dead bodies. Mm-hmm. And it's always blew my mind based on what aquariums are. I'm like, this looks like crap. It was a decent aquarium, but just the outside of it, like, What did you paint an old like train?
They redid. They redid the whole thing. They have a brand new.
It looks
new
awesome. Yeah, it looks great.
I like the aquarium.
Yeah, the aquarium's good. I got to take my daughter there, the budding marine biologist. She's already hassling me to go down.
What did you get to do or experience as a kid that most people don't? 206-803-ROCK.
Hello, Ashley. Welcome to the men's room.
How you doing, guys?
Hola.
Long-time listener, kind of first-time caller.
I appreciate that.
How are you kind of a first-time caller?
I tried to call in a couple years ago, and I couldn't wait on the line long enough to talk to you guys.
Okay.
We thought we maybe dumped you.
No. So when I was a kid, my dad worked for the railroad in Cheyenne, Wyoming. That's where I'm from. And I got to ride a train that was pulled by steam engines like 20 miles out of town.
That's cool. So how old was that locomotive? 100 years?
It was close to that. The two engines that pulled it were the 3985 and the 844.
How was typically on a rail line? There's a lot of scenic beauty. Was that part of that whole thing?
No, it was just a short ride, kind of through the prairie, really. But it was still cool to be able to just see the steam engines, you know, pulling you up the hill and chugging and steam everywhere.
Did it get you any more interested in trains themselves?
I mean, it did. I was interested in trains anyway, so it just made it more so.
All right, that makes sense.
There's nothing wrong with that.
My grandfather worked on a scenic railroad.
Oh, yeah?
He loved it. He just loved the talking to people, explaining everything, the history of the train. His dad worked on the railroad his entire life, so he had...
Well, given that area, too, there's got to be some very cool scenic train rides.
And a lot of history, I would imagine. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And typically, you just like kind of here, you hug the water, you hug the river, hug wherever's flat. And then, you know, those were just winding through the valleys. And apparently, I never took the Cass Scenic Railroad that he worked on, but it apparently, just a beautiful trip.
I would think so.
They do dinner and, you know, do all that crap and get to the end.
You know, one thing that we got to do as kids, I think maybe all of us got to do it that kids might not ever be able to do again, was going to the cockpit of a commercial airline.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I never got to go in a cockpit, but I always was...
Oh, I did,
got
man.
Wings when, and, you know, got somebody to take care of.
We get the wing, but even if I'm traveling with my parents, if you were, like, 10 or younger, I mean, as soon as you got on the plane, they handed you wings. And, of course, the pilot would tell you, Finny, you're my co-pilot for this flight. You're like, cool, because as a kid, you buy into it. But then they'd always ask, like, do you want to go into the cockpit? You're like, sure. You're not flying yet, right? You're still on the ground, but they wouldn't let your parents in there. But they let the kids in there. So my brother and I mean, probably on 7 different flights throughout the course of my life. Looking at the cockpit, like, this is cool, got my wings. Of course, you also got a deck of cards, peanuts, all the good stuff. But I just realized, like, my kids now, when we're getting off of a plane and they can see into the cockpit, they're like, God, that looks so cool. I'm like, it is, and you'll never know. If you don't become a pilot, no one's going to.
You can't do it now because, you know, pilots on mushrooms ruined it. What did you get to do or experience as a kid that most people don't? 206-803-RAP.
I think the first time I took a flight, I was like 12. I might have gotten wings, but yeah, they definitely didn't let us in the cockpit.
Really?
Yeah.
What year was that about then? 92-ish, 93? I wonder when they stopped doing that, because, yeah, I remember, and granted,
9/11.
Well, obviously then, but of 92, they're already not letting you in.
Well, Richard Reed did that before that.
Yeah, they let us in there, and it was always cool, but it was also terrifying, because I'm like, there's a lot of things to look at in here. How do they fly this plane?
Yeah.
Just like with all this crap, should I be comfortable? But then, you know, basically they explain, like, look, all this stuff is here basically for security measures. We only look at, like, 3 different things. It's kind of like when you first land radio, and you look at the radio board, and there's 48 channels, and there's lights beeping, and you're like, oh, my God, I'll never be able to do this. And then everyone tells you, dude, you're going to use 2 of these things.
Right.
That's it.
Yep. Yeah, and that's why their checklist, because I know Miles has watched this old man show, too, called Air
Disasters.
Air Disasters.
Oh, yeah.
And they love that show.
Yeah, but I never realized, like, though, that's why they do the same exact checklist every doesn't matter if you've been flying for 50 years. You do the same exact thing just to make sure.
You know what's messed up about that show? There was one that I was years ago, okay? So it's an hour-long show, and it is called Air Disasters. Don't expect a happy ending. But in this case, I did. They're talking about this flight. Something had gone wrong. So it's a whole hour show about how things had gone wrong. But as they're narrating this, and, you know, they recreate it. So they point out, something was wrong with, like, one of the foot pedals. Like, whatever the case, as it turns out, there's another pilot from a different airline who's on board the flight, and this is what they need. They need someone who understands what they're doing in the cockpit with them, okay? So this guy's like, look, I fly for different airline, but we fly the same planes, and they're like, come on up. So they show this guy. He joins them in the cockpit. They have now figured out what they're going to do to land the plane safely, and this other pilot from the other airline, he's basically lying on the floor, and he's doing something with the pedals down there. They're directing him, and you're like, oh, okay, how convenient is this? Because that's how they spun this. And then they show the actual footage of the plane landing. I was like, Jesus, man. Like, seriously, we sat through this whole thing, and they're like, and it's very fortuitous that this other pilot's there. And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, then they show the actual footage, and it's just a ball of flame. Like, oh, God.
The only solace of that show is that most of them are, most of the disasters are pretty old.
Most of them, yes.
Once in a while, it's like 2010. You're like, oh, God.
What did you get to do or experience as a kid that most people don't? 206-803-ROCK.
Hello, Patrick. Welcome to the men's room.
Hola, fellas.
Hola.
So do any of you guys remember that really arguably the worst movie Clint Eastwood ever made called Bronco Billy?
I recall the name of the movie, but I'm not sure that I saw it.
All right, so it was really low budget, and they rolled through, and they filmed in a little ho-dunk area right outside a little ho-dunk town that I lived in, and last minute they got to choose 20 kids to film the orphanage scene in that movie, and the school chose me to be a stand-in in that movie, so I got to hang out with Clint Eastwood for a day.
That's pretty cool.
All right.
Was he a nice guy?
Yeah, he was. It was interesting because it was so last minute. I mean, it chose one day and we filmed the next. The filming was about 4 hours, but for whatever reason, he kind of took a shine to me and he let me ride his horse.
What?
Yeah, I'm supposed to be one of the only people he ever let ride his personal horse.
What is it about you that you think that he liked?
You know, back then I was a nice kid, you know.
So, back then I was a decent human being.
Yeah. A nice, cute kid, but things changed. He wouldn't like me now, I don't think.
How much screen time did you end up getting when the movie came out?
You can see me in there for probably, but there's this orphanage scene where he walks through and they film the 20 orphanage kids, and so it shows me in there like, you know, two times for probably a total of like 30 seconds.
That's Patrick, cool. Hey, you look like an orphan. This is perfect
nothing
for
nothing wrong with that, yeah. Do you even have a helm?
Yeah, you know, it took 4 hours to film that, and they fed us. We got to eat with Clint and hang out with him. Like I said, he let me ride his horse, and that was pretty cool.
That is awesome.
Yeah. Had you ever ridden a horse before?
Well, growing up in Idaho, right?
But okay. Say no more.
Do you have a copy of the movie?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've got the original VHS copy.
Yeah, well, it's go figure. I mean, that's where it's going to be.
And you said it's arguably the worst movie that he ever made.
Well, did you ever watch it? I can't think of a worse movie.
I have not seen it, but yeah. If you're
I think there's a reason why they last minute chose 20 kids in little ho-dunk towns in Idaho to film an orphan scene, and we didn't get paid. We got to eat lunch, and that was about it.
Yeah, that's a par for the course, man. Doesn't matter what the movie is. If you're a stand-in or extra and you don't have a line in the movie, that's the way it's going to go. Sometimes they'll give you $50 or $25, but typically they'll just feed you, and you have a chance of being in the movie.
Says it was a modest commercial hit, but appreciated by critics.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Well, there you go. It's a movie may have sucked, but critically acclaimed.
Yeah, they enjoyed it.
That's usually a warning sign to me.
I mean, it doesn't really suck. It's just not appropriate for kids, probably. I mean, as far as them getting it.
Maybe. I feel like when critics really, really love it, like you've checked all the boxes of what it is to technically make a perfect movie, but it doesn't mean it's good. Like Citizen Kane. Citizen Kane, this is like critics go, this is one of the finest movies ever made in the history of cinema. So I look forward to seeing it. I was probably like 20. I remember watching that movie, and I'm like, it's a steaming pile of hot bat ass.
What did you get to do or experience as a kid that most people don't? 206-803-ROCK.
Makes you wonder what the hell they were watching back in that day.
I don't know.
This is the greatest movie ever made.
I mean, well, there's some movies too that now.
There's some movies too that are good, but like disturbing.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Like, you ever seen The Deer Hunter?
No, but I've heard it's very disturbing.
It's disturbing. It's a powerful piece of film. Yeah, I've seen it once. I would never watch it again.
I felt that way with Full Metal Jacket. I'm like, oh, it's a great movie. You want to watch it again? Nope.
Right, in Full Metal Jacket. That's what I always tell people. Go, remember, there's two halves to that movie.
Yeah, the first half.
Everybody just quotes the front half with Arlie Ermey.
Yep, and then it kind of comes to an end.
Oh, my goodness. That second. I mean, the whole movie's dark.
It really is. Yep. Hello, Jim. Welcome to the men's room.
Hola, bitch.
Hola.
So, Jim, what did you get to experience as a kid?
Right around 1981 or 1982, my kid brother was playing Little League in a small town in southern New Jersey. And the coaches had a year-end barbecue. And the coaches also had a tie-in with a very prominent restaurant in southern New Jersey. And at the time, Pete Rose was on the Philadelphia Phillies. So during the cookout, the manager at the restaurant called the manager of the Little League team and said, Pete Rose just sat down in here and he wants to meet the Little League team. So it was a mad rush to put all of us in minivans and station wagons and get us to the restaurant. Pete Rose sat there with all the kids for what felt like hours, signed everything you could put a signature on, and proceeded to still pay for his meal.
And at that point in time, Pete Rose hadn't been condemned by Major League Baseball either.
No,
he was a player manager at that point in time, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe so.
So do you still have a soft spot for Pete Rose? Because most people hate the guy. But based on your interaction.
I think he's great.
Oh, you love him?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair enough, man.
Yep. Just like you guys. I don't know if you guys remember the first Hangover Ball. We sat and drank beers together, Ted and Miles and my wife and I at the HHB.
Oh, nice. Well, hopefully we got nice and buzzed.
Yes, we did. We had a good time, and I watched Steve play. And if you get the chance to see Thrill play, it's quite an experience.
Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm glad we left a good impression.
Absolutely.
Us and Pete Rose.
Absolutely.
I don't know if I want to be in the same room, same with Pete Rose.
But he really likes Pete
Rose. He likes Pete Rose.
I like how you said, I hope he got good and buzzed up. I'm like, he just said he was drinking beer with you and Ted.
Right.
He definitely got buzzed.
It's like Lance Armstrong. If you had a chance to meet him before all that crap went down, you know, he's an American icon.
But I'd always heard that he's a douche. Like, Pete Rose was kind, at least at the time. He has since been condemned for his actions. But like Lance Armstrong, while he was an icon, it just seemed that even when he was on top of the world, people that met him personally are like, he sucks.
Right. Everybody in our industry was like, you don't want to interview him. Like, he sucks.
I mean, think about that. Like, no, we know he's an icon, but we hate him.
What did you get to do or experience as a kid that most people don't? 206-803-ROCK.
That should be a TV show on cable, right? You have air disasters. Why not do, hated icons? Ooh. Pete Rose, yeah. American icon. Lance Armstrong, there's all these people. And Bill Cosby.
Season 22.
Right. My issue with Pete Rose is just everybody knew you did it.
Just say
it. You knew you did it, right. But then to just go on that attack and everybody else and just to bitch and a moan. It's like if you had just admitted it years ago, you'd probably be in the Hall of Fame by now.
Guaranteed. Mm-hmm. Water under the bridge at that point. Hello, Stacy. Welcome to the men's room.
Hey, how's it going?
Hola.
So when I was 13 and my brother was 9, my mom had a regular 9-to-5 job at a bank. And then in the evenings, she performed, in a dance review type show, downtown Seattle called, The Follies. This is way long time ago, 80s. And, it was in Jack McGovern's Music Hall, which has since been torn down a long time ago also. But the producer of that show decided to take a smaller version of the cast to tour the country and also Bermuda. And so my mom was selected, offered one of the spots in the smaller cast. And so my brother and I got to tour to all these vacation destinations and other venues throughout the country. And they pulled us out of school. So we were out of school for 4 years.
Damn.
Also included various Playboy clubs way back when that was a thing. Mm. So we looked really out of place, as you can imagine. Kids just kind of hanging out in the Playboy clubs, going from room to restaurant.
Well, did you say you had a brother?
Yeah.
Oh, I bet he loved it.
Yeah.
Well, I guarantee it. Where are we going tonight, Mom? I love you, Mom.
He just took it for granted. I mean, it didn't really faze us too much. It fazed other people.
Right, because you only know what you know.
But you pulled me out of... You, You pull me out of school for 4 years, I am the happiest kid in the world.
I don't care what the reason is.
Oh, yeah. We spent a lot of time swimming. I went to Hilton Head Island, Bermuda, New York, Wisconsin, New Jersey, Atlantic City, and Great Gorge.
Well, other than Atlantic City, it sounds good. Yeah. Hey, so by not going to school for 4 years, what kind of positive and or negative impact did that have for you as you move into adulthood?
Well, you learn how to be very independent in terms of your studying. We took correspondence classes before computers, right? So we had to like hand write everything and mail it in to a teacher.
Okay.
And so you don't have classmates. You kind of make friends for a short period of time with other kids that are there with families vacationing, and then they're gone. So it was more like a family atmosphere with the adult cast members. They were like a surrogate family.
Okay. What was your most memory that you keep from that? Was there one thing in particular that was just the highlight of it?
I think just the freedom, just the seeing the different places, going from place to place. I mean, we met a few celebrities, but they're also kind of passe by now or deceased, you know, like Dudley Moore, Lonnie Shore, a lot of kind of just lounge room acts. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's cool, though, man.
That's the first one I've heard where I'm like, I might be a little jealous.
What did you get to do or experience as a kid that most people don't? 206-803-ROCK.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
KISW. The men's room returns with Miles and Thrill.
Coming up, the return of Ted versus the FCC right after emails on our question, what did you get to do or experience as a kid that most people don't? 206-803-ROCK.
A couple of texts here. One, somebody would like to address us directly. It says, Air Disasters, the television show, it's not an old man's show. I watch it all the time and I'm only 32. 33 on Monday. As far as what you got to do as a kid that most people don't get to do in their life, in high school, I was in marching band. We got to play the national anthem at Dodger Stadium for one of the 1988 NLCS games.
Jesus.
That is getting it done. As far as getting into the airplane cockpit on a commercial flight, it says, my daughter's 5. She's been in the cockpit 3 or 4 times. We always ask when we get on, and if they can, they let us in after the flight.
That's awesome.
I'm glad to know they still do that, man. Let's see. I got to hold the Olympic torch in 1984 when it passed through Monroe. I was number 3. No recollection, only photographic evidence. That's still cool, though, man.
Yeah.
The Olympic torch. I don't even know why it'd be a big deal, other than I'm holding a flaming stick, but just because of what it is, you're like, all right.
Yeah.
Never done anything like that. But then anything cool like that.
No, man, I thought about trying to get to the Winter Olympics when they were in Whistler and in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And it was just, you could not get a hotel room.
Of course.
You could get tickets, but you just didn't have a place to stay. Well, so that entire area, maybe you could have stayed in Bellingham. I don't know, but...
But how far of a drive? That's the only part of the Winter Olympic Games.
It's a pretty good haul.
Summer Olympics, typically, and look, I know the prices of hotels will go through the roof, but you can stay somewhere reasonably close to where you're trying to go.
Hopefully.
Winter Olympics, not so much.
What did you get to do or experience as a kid that most people don't? 206-803-ROCK.
Hello, Wade. Welcome to the men's room.
You're listening to Coast AM on Art Bell.
Hello, Wade.
Hola.
Hola. Happy Friday, guys.
Yeah.
So, when I was a kid, probably in like junior high or whatever, my brother was pretty academic, I guess you'd say. And one year, he got straight A's. And so my parents went to this, I don't know, it's like a bash auction kind of thing. And they bid on this package or whatever. We got to go to the Kingdom when it was still there. And all access, VIP treatment, whatever, for the Mariners game. We were big Mariners fans growing up. And not so much this year, but... so we got to go out on the field. And we got to go in the dugout and then even the locker room. And, like, when you go in the locker room, they have these, like, cases of baseballs. And, like, when the players would come in, they would just, like, grab a bunch of them and sign, like, you know, six or seven of them and then go about their way or whatever. So they had a whole case of autographed baseballs. And so we got to grab a couple of those. And then we got to meet a bunch of players. And we even got to meet, if you guys remember, Billy Martin.
Oh, yeah. God. Yeah, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, the guy that kicked dirt on the plate all the time. Uh-huh. And yeah. All that stuff. Yep. Go crazy.
He and George.
Yeah. I mean, we had a lot of good memories in that kingdom. Gaylord Perry's 300th win. We were at that game and stuff. And, and Ted, when you went to the cockpit or whatever when you were a kid, I had to do that when I was a kid, too, because I'm a product of divorced parents, so I had to...
Well, wait a minute. You got the all-access pass to the Mariners because your brother got the straight A's.
Yeah, thank God for my brother.
Yeah, but okay. See, man... No, that...
I wasn't so bright. But he was. So that was cool. By proxy, I got to go.
But you think about the people that have sat in that dugout that are just legendary baseball players. I mean, everybody from Randy Johnson to Edgar sure. Martinez. You know, I mean, Ken Griffey Jr., Ken Griffey Sr.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at those teams, Jay Buhner. I mean, that's there's a lot of good baseball going on back then. So just to kind of have that experience, that's really cool.
But he got to have that experience again because of his brother. And the reason there's bitterness in my voice, my brother got straight A's. And he got treated to many things as a result. And me, like Wade, not necessarily the brightest academic student, I never got any, like, derivative stuff as a result of my brother. So even if, like, right. Hey, your brother got straight A's, we're taking him to whatever restaurant. They're like, no, we're taking him to the restaurant. You are not going. Because getting one C and all the rest are D's, you're not included in this.
And, like, I can't remember who. I heard somebody famous talking about they would get in trouble for breaking into their school. Even though they didn't like going to school, right?
Okay.
And I was the same way. Like, I certainly enjoyed high school, but, like, school was not my favorite thing.
Right.
So now that my brother is a principal, it's kind of fun. Because sometimes, like, when I'm back and it's cold and rainy, he's like, do you want to go open up the gym and shoot hoops?
Oh, God, yeah.
Like, yeah, this is awesome.
You get the whole thing to yourself?
Right, it's
that
unreal.
That is crazy. What did you get to do or experience as a kid that most people don't? 206-803-ROCK.
Hello, Brock. Welcome to the men's room.
Hola, bitches.
Hola.
So that was a great game yesterday. Sorry about that loss.
If you're going to lose, then lose that kind of game. It was a great game.
And look, that's the way to phrase it. For the first game of the year, that was awesome.
It was a great way to, right. Great way to start the season.
I got a question for you, though.
What's up?
Would you have rather lost the way that you lost or that he scored and he was going to go, it looked like he was going to go for two, and then you didn't get the 2-point conversion and didn't win.
We both know the answer to that, right? So here's the thing. We get our foot in, it's a touchdown, you go for two. I'm already pissed because I hate, right? I hate that. I understand where he's coming from. It's Kansas City.
You
it's
do
the
not
Ravens.
Want to go to overtime with the Chiefs.
And that's the thing. You don't even want to play them, no. But you certainly do not want to go to overtime. So I get it. But to answer your question, had we gone for two and not gotten it, I would have lost my S. And I was actually pretty calm about it yesterday. We just didn't get our foot in, right? And I go like, hey, man, it happens. But, yeah, if we had gone for two and didn't get it and lost the game, yeah, I'd be livid.
A great game, though.
Yeah, I was nervous for you, really. And that Viagra Boys, I'd never heard that before. Put that down for me. I like that.
Oh, man, we're trying. I don't think the votes are going to be
gotta,
there,
you got to count. It only works if you vote on Twitter. So, sorry, that vote doesn't count, Miles.
Yeah, okay.
All right, well, so... I'm from a divorced family. Dad worked for Kodak. At the beginning, he was getting transferred around a lot. So he got transferred to Seattle, where my mom meets my soon-to-be father. My parents, my dad gets transferred back to Rochester. They get divorced. My mom moves right back to Seattle and remarries. So I'm 5 years old and my brother is two. So from then on, every summer and every other Christmas, we would fly back from Seattle to Rochester. And this is back in the 70s. You know, there was no direct flight from Seattle to Rochester, so we'd have to...
Is there one now?
Yeah, right. Tell us about it.
So were you nervous the first time you had to fly alone, or did you pick up on it pretty quick?
Actually, we picked up on it pretty quick. After a while, it got old, and I got to an age where I you know, we were supposed to go to a certain age, and I was like, can we stop having us go with this? They were stewards of stuff, man.
Yeah.
but can we stop riding with the stewardess? And the funny thing is they would put us in the back of the plane with the stewardess in the smoking section. And why is the smoking section in the back of the plane like it really matters?
Yeah. I remember that.
You know
that.
What? I will right. Like,
it's the 70s.
When you look back on that stuff, like, it's silly to me. Like every bar and restaurant you went to, there was just like a railing. But it's like, all right, mm-hmm. smoke yeah. it over there.
Yep.
Well, what's nuts is I remember when I was a kid, when growing up, my dad smoked. Everyone I knew smoked, basically. If you're an adult, so you'd go into a restaurant, and the restaurant was smoking, just period. It wasn't even a question. Ashtrays on the table. McDonald's used to have their little foil ashtrays sitting on the table when you went to McDonald's. Then get a little bit older, and they introduced the non-smoking section. But if you had 20 tables in your restaurant, like four of them were for non-smoking. Go a few more years, it was split 50-50. And so 50% is non-smoking, 50% is
right,
smoking.
Right, because they would ask mm-hmm. you.
Yeah, they'd always say smoking or non-smoking, right? It's kind of like asking booth or table now. Then the smoking section became the size of the initial non-smoking section. There's maybe four tables and your other 16 are for non-smoking. Then it was just gone. Or they used to do, you could smoke at the bar, but not in the restaurant bar. And, but like correct. You're saying, the smoke just wafted over to the tables, just no one smoking at your table.
It still seems weird. Going to Vegas and just sitting at a bar and lighting a cigarette up, you realize, like, I don't feel right now.
Vegas doesn't bug me too much because they filter it so much that it doesn't smell
it's
smoky.
It's the mechanics of lighting
right, being indoors
a cigarette inside. Like, I'm just looking around, like, in half a time now anymore, I mean, I will step outside to smoke. Just to get some fresh air anyway, but it's so common for me to do that.
Yeah,
it's kind of like just a break away from whatever, but because if I could, I'd just sit there and chain smoke. So I'm trying to keep myself not doing that. But
I mean, I guess it hasn't been over. I mean, granted, we're old, getting older.
Yeah.
But like, it doesn't feel like it's been, date-wise, it doesn't seem like it's been that long, but you're right. Trying to fathom like sitting at a bar smoking cigs just seems insane now. Yeah.
Well, when Seattle first implemented it, I was pissed. Like, man, I gotta go outside and smoke. Now I kind of love it. I really do. And like Miles said, it's just kind of a break for me. And you meet a lot of different people. But at that time, early in that non-smoking thing, that wasn't the case everywhere. So we'd flown back to Baltimore for like a Ravens game or something. But you could still smoke in a bar. And I'm like, this is awesome. So I'm chain smoking. I'm doing my thing. I'm talking to people. I did not think about it until we got back to Seattle. We opened our suitcase. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Happens every time I come back from Vegas. It's
yeah. Like, it just reeks of smoke. Wow. And I prefer to smoke outside.
Like, do I smell like that?
Yes. Yeah.
What did you get to do or experience as a kid that most people don't? 206-803-ROCK.
Hello, Dirk. Welcome to the men's room.
Hola, bitches.
Hola.
So, strange coincidence, the gentleman Brock that you just talked to,
yeah,
is my old roommate from Central back in the, we'll say, mid-80s.
Damn. Okay.
What up, Brock?
What up,
you owe me
Brock?
Money for that cable bill.
And you never right? once paid for drugs, Brock.
Oh, no.
And I know you ate my last hot pocket, you lying
thing. El Paso burrito.
And another thing that he had that was kind of a bonus was his new dad, I guess, in Seattle was the captain of the Seattle Yacht Club at one point.
Ooh. So
when we would come back to Seattle to, let's say, get stuff from Ellensburg, we could stop off at the captain's room at the Seattle Yacht Club and just troll around and, grab a couple of things. It was kind of cool. He was taking me places, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Get stuff in Marysville and grab things. Yeah, mm-hmm. We got you.
Right. So when I was a kid, my dad was an Army helicopter pilot, and he did two tours in Vietnam and such. But when we would be other places cross country, I lived in Alabama for a while, and they would do, I don't remember if it was there or here, but they would do, get the families together and show what the helicopters could do. So you get to sit on a, like a bleachers, I guess, and then the helicopters would come out and blow stuff up, shoot things, tanks and stuff like that. But as he was, as he's retiring, when we moved up here, he had a regular pilot's license too. So we would rent Cessnas, and we flew to Yellowstone. Just our little family would fly to Yellowstone.
How long would it take you guys to fly from here to Yellowstone on a Cessna?
I don't recall exactly. We'd have to stop once. Of course, I think we had to stop an extra time because I had to do a 10-100. just jump out of the plane on the runway and take a quick whiz. I was probably in 8th grade or something.
Okay,
how do you radio that to air traffic?
That is an interesting conundrum.
Because it's one thing if I'm driving down the highway and my kid's like, "Dad, I got to pee." I'm like, "All right, cool." We pull to the side of the road, but I don't have to radio anybody about this. So does your dad? Because I'm sure you have to explain to an airport that's not expecting you why it is you need this runway.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure they did. There's also a lot of little airports that doesn't have a lot of traffic. There's some little airports that you just talk to each other. There's no radio, you know, there's no air traffic control. You just announce that you're, you know, the blue Cessna and you're going to be landing.
Yeah, my son Dirk has the P's.
Yeah, but so, as a parent, you can't lie. Like, one more exit.
Right.
All right.
I can't remember exactly, but he did say something like, "Yeah, I've got a little mini emergency here. My passenger needs to take care of some quick business." And I just jumped out and took a whiz and then jumped back in.
And right back up.
Taxied around and took off.
I would love to be able to just decide I wanted to rent a Cessna and fly someplace on the quick.
Well, get your license and have a lot.
Later, when he made a little bit of money, he bought his own Cessna that we used to keep over in Gig Harbor. That's where the Tacoma Airport is. And he would call me up, and you know, then I was in my 30s and such. So he would say, "Hey, did you want to go? You want to go grab some lunch in Friday Harbor? Or do you want to go get fish and chips in Bremerton?" So we would just fly from here to Bremerton for the afternoon. And he would call it I forget exactly how much then, but hey, you want to have $500 lunch, which is gas and fish and chips.
Yeah.
And we'd fly up to, you know, Friday Harbor and just grab some lunch, maybe walk around town a little bit. You know, the same someone would do if they wanted to drive into Seattle, but we would fly up to there. So
that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, that's
fly and, you know, little stuff like that. So
that is cool.
That is so cool.
I flew an airplane before I ever learned to drive a car.
I was going
to
say, do you have your pilot license?
I do not. No, but I've been through most of the ground school.
That seems like the easy part of learning to fly, in case of an emergency,
he wanted me to be able to have landed a plane before. So,
how many times have you landed a plane?
Maybe 3 or 4 times.
Okay.
I'm way more comfortable taking it off than he also was a flight instructor. So, I mean, he was actually instrument ticket examiner. So he taught people to teach people how to use the instruments. So,
okay. I can't believe you didn't get your license, man. I'd at least got my license. I knew a guy. I didn't. I grew up with this kid. My parents are still friends with his parents. This dude is probably 50 years old now, but we had moved away from Rochester at this point, and my mother goes, "Oh, do you remember Andy Shucker?" I'm like, "Oh, yeah, of course." She's like, I want to say he was 15 or 16 at this point. There are no pilots in the family, nothing like that. She's like, "He got his pilot's license." Like,
what? At 15.
At 15 or 16, whatever age you have to be to fly solo was the thing. So I'm like, where does he fly? And according to his parents, so he lived in Rochester at the time. He would like rent his Cessna, fly to Buffalo, and just like it's about 60 miles. And just like this guy said, grab lunch.
Yeah.
Flew to Niagara Falls a couple times. Hey, you know, not to the Canadian side, because that's an international border. But like he'd land his plane at whatever, the Niagara Airport, walk across the bridge on the Canadian side, and fly back. And I'm like, that's what he does.
Well, so my mom's
like, he's 16. It's not like he has a job or anything.
So I'm saying, like, flying to Friday Harbor, like, I just went there. It's awesome. But like, you got to drive up to Anacortes.
Right.
They get on a ferry.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. And time out the ferry, getting home. Like, fly it seems great.
Can we get a private Cessna for this? Because think about the Men's Room World Tour, right? We need to ask Castle about this, right? We went to Bremerton. It takes about an hour and a half to get there from here.
Or helicopters.
You know.
We used to work with this guy. He was a morning show producer for The Wolf. And he was taking his pilot's license tests and doing all the time and all that crap. And I was intrigued by it. So I always asked Randy, like, how's it coming along? You know, and they're stepping up on planes and what he's able to fly and all this stuff. And there came a point in time where, like, he's like, you know what? I'm done with radio. Done it most of my life. I want to be a pilot. And I was like, well, that's awesome, Randy. You know, congratulations. A couple of years go by. I'm getting on an Alaska flight. And Randy's the pilot that steps off the plane. I'm like, Jesus Christ, man. I'm like, that is awesome. I was like,
didn't expect to see it.
It can be done. What did you get to do or experience as a kid that most people don't? 206-803-ROCK.
Hello, Megan. Welcome to the men's room.
Hola. Happy Friday.
All right. Hola. Hola. Hell yeah, happy Friday.
My story is in middle school, we got to spend the night at the Woodland Park Zoo for a school field trip.
You got to spend the night?
Yep.
What area of the zoo do you guys set up base?
It was this like auditorium style conference center kind of place. It was just our one class, so it wasn't too many people, and then our parents who chaperoned.
Are there any animals that come out more at night that you never get to see during the day? Because there's a lot of nocturnal animals, right? So you go to the zoo, and they'll say, this is sleeping, this is sleeping. And you go like, right, I get it, but you just never see them.
Honestly, it's hard for me to remember because it was, you know, like 25 years ago or so, but I do remember hearing like the peacocks at night and just hearing a lot of animals at night, and we were all staying up late listening to it, but I don't really remember like specifics of what we saw at nighttime. I just remember, you know, like throwing candy at each other and being kids and being embarrassed that my parents were chaperoning and all that stuff.
I'd like to do a corner hit of acid and go in the butterfly enclosure.
The butterfly enclosure?
Yeah. I think that'd be nuts.
Really?
Yes.
We're doing psychedelics. I think the zoo in general will be awesome.
In the butterfly enclosure is like, whoa.
The butterfly enclosure.
Yes.
All these animals the butterfly enclosure. Yes. They got lions and stuff.
I know that. Giraffes. I don't care.
Freaking penguins.
I got all these butterflies flying around me, and I'm having a good time.
Hang out in the yard.
I want to go watch the prairie dogs.
No. Prairie dogs?
Do they have prairie dogs?
I don't know. Do they have prairie dogs?
They might have. They had them at the National Zoo, but I liked them as a kid.
All these damn animals, and this is where you guys go. You know, it sounds like something Castle told me.
I would watch the penguins if they had penguins. You know what I mean? That would be cool.
Castle said he went to Woodland Park Zoo a couple of years ago, and there is a woman that he does not know who's there with her son. Her son's maybe 5 or 6 years old. So a bald eagle had landed nearby. And Castle says, I'm listening to this woman tell her son, like, Belly, look, that's a bald eagle. Belly, look at it. That's an actual bald eagle. So Castle walked up to her and said, and there's a lion right there. Like, literally, 15 feet away from it. It's a freaking lion. That's a bald eagle, man. It's a lion. Come on.
What did you get to do or experience as a kid that most people don't? 206-803-ROCK.
Hello, Ron. Welcome to the men's room.
Hola.
Hola.
So I didn't know what I was doing was as cool as it is now when I tell the story, but when I was in junior high, 2002, my sister and brother-in-law worked for LeMay. Do you guys know LeMay Waste Management?
I don't.
LeMay, look up. Well, okay, it's a they run the waste down in Tacoma, in Pierce County area. You know, they pick up the trash from your homes and stuff.
Yeah.
But LeMay Car Museum at Marymount is really, really, really cool. Check it out if you don't know what it is.
I mean, I know the car museum.
Yeah. So they worked for them and that family for quite a while. And during the summer, I would go to the property with them. I would go to work with them, and they had their dogs. And I would get to walk around the property and explore, basically. And as I'm walking, I start finding empty old rundown buildings, you know, in the very back in the trees and stuff. And sure enough, there every single barn shed you can think of is full of cars. And I come across Hitler's car, sit in that, screw around in that, play in that, and I go and you just keep on it just keeps going and going, and the barns and everything is full of cars, anything and everything you can think of, because LeMay collected cars. That's what his thing was. And I had free roam and access to the museum itself, and I would go through the museum. But the coolest stuff was the stuff you found that was buried, like the DeLorean, you know, is in the museum.
Oh, yeah.
Sit in the DeLorean, and they have this really cool rocket car. Play around the rocket car and sit in that. It was a cool experience just to see it all. And when you go there now with friends and family and you get to tell the story, you know, everyone just wants to know how many cars there were and what it's like. And it was really cool.
That's awesome.
That does sound cool, man. That's something I love to do with my dad, because my dad's always been a car guy. Yeah. So, like, he would lose his mind.
Coming up, we'll drink and toast into the weekend with a shot of the day and the return of Ted versus the FCC. All coming up next.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.